Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I'm your host, Ryan Airy, and I got a really big fun show for you today. We're going to be talking about The Mandalorian and Grogu. Now, this is a review video. I think we're going to get into spoilers, so spoiler alerts ahead for that. I will say that if I knew the whole movie before I saw it, I knew everything that happened, and it did not affect my enjoyment or my unenjoyment of it. So if you just want to hear like some takes on it, I think that you can still go in and enjoy the film, even having heard spoilers. So we're going to have Star Wars Explained, Alex and Molly on in just a second to get their thoughts on this, along with a couple other favorites. And before we get into this, I want to remind you guys that super chats are always encouraged, but not required. We'll try to address all of them that we can. And we've got a poll going right now that says 24% of you guys think that the movie was awesome. Only 19% said meh, and 26% said haven't seen it. So hopefully today we can help you make up your mind on whether or not to see the film. Now, personally, I got to throw this out there. I am biased. I really hate that it's not Mandalorian season 4, in part because we got crazy views on Mandalorian videos. I know that's how a lot of you guys met us for the first time. And I really hate that I don't get to cover this every week because, you'll find out what I think in just a little bit. I don't necessarily think this movie is the jump to the big screen that maybe Lucasfilm hoped it would be. But it is great to see Star Wars in movie theaters again. I have talked way too much. Let's go ahead and bring on some of our guests. You know him as the guy who is always on break, Mr. Tommy Bechtold. What's up, Tommy?
Well, obviously, I didn't know that everyone in here has a peanut allergy, Janet. I was just assuming most people were probably allergic to tree nuts. Peanuts are a legume. Ryan, how are you? Sorry, just dealing with a little work stuff here, but we're good to go.
Wait, is that the source of that ambulance siren I heard in the background when we first came on?
You know, we have a general siren tone playing at the work because there's just so many injuries that oftentimes it's just safer to have people assume a siren is on the way so that, you know, they can lower their heart rates.
Understood. I know you're on break, but we do need to get you one of those signs that say it's been -2 days since the last workplace accident. And of course, you know him as the guy who's trapped, 1 minute, as the guy who's trapped in our TV but doesn't know it, so please don't tell him, Mr. Colton Ogbar.
Oh, you got my muffins.
Wow, that peanut allergy really carries over into the television.
What was that, Saw Gerrera? Is that your Saw Gerrera impression over there?
Look, I'm allergic to peanuts, so I don't appreciate your joking. It's not funny.
How do you feel about these nuts?
It's a legit.
Got his ass.
And look, I'll say this, guys. The other two guests we have on have been trying to get these two people on for a while.
Great first impression.
I said we're on our best behavior.
Oh, yeah. Well, trying to be. I've been trying to have these two people on for a long time. They run one of the best YouTube channels about Star Wars or about anything. And I was a little bit nervous about having them on because they're the channel that I go to when I don't know something. And, of course, we credit them all the way, but I don't even like watching their videos because they're so damn good. They only make me feel bad about myself. We have Alex and Molly Damon from Star Wars Explained, the premier Star Wars channel on YouTube. God, it's good to actually meet you guys face to face. How are you?
I felt like a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
One of the best channels on anything. I don't.
I think so, but I'm biased in that. These guys, we had about 10 minutes to awkwardly stare at each other where we didn't want to talk about the movie or Star Wars. So we had to so I did tell you guys though, especially your recap videos, your High Republic recap, because I read a lot of High Republic. I can't read all of it. It's too much, you know? So you guys are just there taking Fake the fan. Pressure off all us sinners. We really appreciate it.
It was a lot of content to go over.
I can't imagine trying to keep up with Star Wars and everything else that you do. We focus on one fandom and that's it. And that's still a lot.
Especially when you factor in publishing and comics and everything else. And so I don't even really know. I think I've picked up a little bit about what you guys thought of the movie. I haven't watched anything on your channel yet because I was saving it for this conversation. So let's start with our guests, Alex, Molly, whatever order you want to go in. What did you think about The Mandalorian and Grogu?
I was surprised at how much I liked it. I kind of went in with pretty low expectations and I was like, I'm hoping it'll be fun. And it was more fun than I thought it would be. Still had lots of criticisms about it, especially in what a lot of people are saying, there's not a whole lot of meat or substance to it, but I just had so much fun watching it. The act of watching it brings me a lot of joy. And then I feel like afterwards we're really breaking it down and talking about all the little issues that we have, but I've seen it 3 times and I've enjoyed it every time.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. We talk about this all the time, that it feels like we have two Star Wars fans within us. There's like the Star Wars explained content making person, and then there's just the person that loves Star Wars. And for me, it was a really fun movie. I liked it a lot, and I actually have seen it 4 times. And every time I see it, I love the parts that I love more, and I kind of like scoff at the parts that I didn't like more. So it's still just like an okay movie for me, but it feels like Star Wars comfort food, you know. It's like really pulpy and fun and silly, and I'm like a huge Grogu fan. Like he's my boy, so I'm never gonna complain about anything that he's in.
See, when
we talked about the comfort food thing the other day, and it was like, yeah, it's like really fun to just like sit and eat that. It's not healthy for you in the long term. I don't think it's like, if every movie were like this, it wouldn't be healthy for the franchise in the long term. But sometimes I just want to shove my face with all the Dedric creatures and watch them all fight. Like that was so much fun for me.
Is that how you pronounce it? Dedric? I always thought it was Dejarik. That's how I've
they
always
said Dejarik
said
in the movie. I always said Dedric, and I refuse to change my
mind. So it's one of those headcanon.
Wow, Ryan, that's like one of the first times you've ever been correct on the pronunciation.
I know. I'm always wrong. I always make it up. Heather Antos got me in such big trouble for how I pronounced Black Kersantan, because I was like, Kersatan. And she's like, that's when you said there's two Star Wars fans within us, I thought you meant how the internet also has two Star Wars fans within it. But you meant more as content creators, where we have to go in and be critical and judge things. But then also the fan in you is kind of going, puppet fun.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like because of what we do in our channel, people don't just ask us, what did you think of the movie? Did you like it? Did you not? They expect us to talk for an hour about the things that we liked and the things that we didn't like. So we have to really go into it, you know, to pick it apart.
It's kind of like, I brought this up, is that I would call myself a Fast and Furious fan, but there's not two Fast and Furious fans inside of me. I watch those movies once and I'm like, man, what a stupid fun ride. And then I never think about it again. But when I'm a Star Wars fan, I'm like a diehard completionist. And I'm like, the movie was fun, but also what does it mean in the long term? How does it affect or not affect anything else? It's like, yeah, you're just looking at it probably too much. Whereas most other people are like, I liked it or I didn't, and then they move on.
Well, we really do grade on a curve, I guess, and like in an unfair curve towards Star Wars when you're a Star Wars fan. Because yeah, I like Fast and Furious too, but I mean, they're awful, but I love watching them.
Exactly.
Well, now hold on. Daddy's got to go to work. You know, like I'll never begrudge that franchise for that line. Colton, what do you think of the movie super, the first impression of it?
Look, I feel like I have like 6 or 7. I didn't even mean to do that. I feel like I have more than two Star Wars fans within me. Like, I think there are so many ways to, like, so many different lenses to view this film through. Like, there's the reviewing it as just a movie. There's reviewing it as a Star Wars movie, which is two very different things. There's reviewing it as a Star Wars movie at this specific moment in time and the current state of Star Wars and what it means for Star Wars going forward and the theatrical, you know, experience and streaming. So there's a lot of different ways you can, you know, break it down. And I think the more you think about this movie, and that's what I've noticed, is I have like two sides of me that there's like the really analytical side that's like, oh, they should have done this. It needed another 30 minutes to develop this character and that one. And I feel like there's a solid movie in there. Had they like actually put in a little bit more effort to like make it feel more like a cohesive piece instead of a continuation of a show. But then there's the other half of me that just had a really good time and it was fun and enjoyed it. So yeah, it's just kind of, there's two halves, I guess, like you guys were saying. And I think everybody's kind of like that. I think all Star Wars fans are kind of like that, those two halves. And while we perhaps are more inclined to be like, it was fun, there's that other half who I think they had fun too, but they're a little bit more inclined to be like, oh, but it sucked. You know, like
but why was Rey a Palpatine? Yes, the movie was fun in Connecticut.
Oh, and can I just say, I loved when the Hutts told Grogu that he was a Dooku. I did not see that coming.
do you guys remember the Guns N' Roses album, Chinese Democracy, when that came out?
Yes.
So Axl Rose took over the band name Guns N' Roses, and for like 20 years was trying to get this damn album made. And when it came out, Chuck Klosterman wrote the review for the AV Club. And he said, and I think you guys will agree with how this sentiment applies to Star Wars, you can't review this album because it's like reviewing a unicorn. Do you review a unicorn based on its comparison to other unicorns, which is something that does not exist? Or do you compare it to horses because they're very horse-like? And I feel like when we're talking about this, we have to split it into two sides. There's the, I'm an analytical person who can go in and watch a film and break down the fundamentals and the three act structure and character development. But I'm also a Star Wars fan who likes Grogu and puppets and, you know, Jeremy Allen White as Rata. So let's break it up this way. We'll let Tommy go first. Tommy, you can pick which way we're going to break it down first. Do we want to talk about as Star Wars fans or as film analysis first?
Choose wisely.
Oh man, I think
you get to do both. Just you're going to start with whichever.
Okay,
one you want.
Well, I'll talk about it as a film analyst first, because inside there are two film analysts. It's Siskel and Ebert. It's the late '80s. We're in a hotel room in Chicago, and they're both inside me. I have to say, this movie did not from a film. There was plenty that I liked about it. But I don't think at the end of the day that this movie was for me as in terms of it didn't pull my interest in enough into like the world of Star Wars. And I love Star Wars and I didn't have any problems with it. There's nothing about this movie that angered me. There's nothing about this movie that annoyed me or really like made me go like, oh, my God, this has jumped the shark. I think just in terms of the Star Wars, the movies that I like, Star Wars or otherwise, I feel like there are moments in the movie that I latch onto and I want to see what happens next. In this movie, I didn't ever feel like I really cared what happens next. I kind of was just enjoying how cute Grogu was. And I was like kind of amused at how like I thought I was going to hate a teenage brooding Hutt, but I kind of was charmed by the performance of Jeremy Allen White. And like, you know, it didn't bother me that he spoke, you know, the common tongue rather than Huttese or whatever. Like I was more surprised. Basic. Is it basic?
Yeah, that's what it's called. Alex and Molly were holding their tongues really well there.
Yes, that's fine. You can correct me anytime. I fully admit that I'm an idiot, but I
Galactic
basic. Common tongue.
Thank you. See, and even me, like, yeah.
Westeros for you guys.
You know what they should have done? Well, what movie is it, Ryan, where it starts in Russian and then it translates into English, but it does like a camera pan, and they do it in Avatar as well. They should have done that.
They
with
did
the
in Avatar 2 really well. They did it in the 13th Warrior. I don't remember
that's
the movie.
13th
in
Warrior is what I was thinking of, but I know
maybe it was German or I think that would have been cool because again the dork side of me was like,
well, if I may, even though this is supposed to be the film analysis period of this. When I saw the trailers, I was like, that's ridiculous. The Hutts would not speak Galactic Basic. They just would not. They would not deign to do that. But in the movie, because they start off talking in Huttese to Den, and then as they're trying to win his sympathy, they switch over to Galactic Basic. I was like, yes.
Well, and Rata has not.
Rata wouldn't do it. Yeah. Exactly. He doesn't want anything to do with them. So, of course, he's going to speak Basic.
And of course,
we know that the Hutts can speak Basic because we've seen Zero the Hutt in the Clone Wars.
The first Hutt. Like,
beloved Zero the Hutt.
Beloved Zero the Hutt.
Yeah.
but yes, but I guess I'm essentially saying I agree with you. I saw the trailer and was like, wait, that's just got to be for the trailer. They won't be speaking Galactic Basic. Look at me growing and learning. But I think like
porn in your voice when you use the term.
No, I'm just kidding. I really do like learning. I'm just a bitter old man. I think in general, just the pace of this movie. And it's going to be so easy to like pin it to like the death of Star Wars and make all these dramatic points that I don't agree with and don't feel like. I think Star Wars is alive and well and fine. I think just as a movie, I wasn't like in my seat going like, I can't wait to see what's revealed next in this movie. I just kept being like, I kind of get what's happening here. This is kind of a like blown out version of an episode of Mandalorian. I mean, the performances. It is, to me, one of the difficulties in translating a TV show to a movie is the performances shouldn't change that much. Like, Pedro Pascal shouldn't play Din Djarin in a different way just because it's in a movie. But I don't know that kind of flat, stilted dialogue works as well when he's, like, the co-protagonist of a story. And I just think in terms of a 2-hour and 12-minute movie, I kind of was sitting there going like, oh, Jesus, this is going to be all right. This is all just a roundabout way for him to get back to the Hutt twins. And like, okay. And that's not to say I didn't enjoy it. It sounds like I hated this movie, and I didn't.
Film, in the first act, your character gets some sort of motivation that affects them personally. And that doesn't really happen in this movie until the third act when they take his helmet off, or maybe that's the middle of the second act or something.
I don't think Din really had any business being the protagonist of this movie. It should have been Grogu. And in fact,
it should have been Grogu in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, that should have been the name of it. And I tell you what they did at the end with having it be Grogu having to save Din instead of usually the other way around. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, I like seeing them together, but I think we could have got a like solid 45 minutes of them together at the beginning, and then the rest of the movie being Grogu trying to save Din. I think that would have been cool. So yeah, to your
Shermali
point about
agrees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always put Grogu ahead.
I agree.
Alex, you're not a big helmet guy, right? Like, I think that's where you land on this.
I mean, if you want me to, when they introduced...
but I think it's a valid point. It's one of the few opinions of yours I've heard about this.
When they introduced the helmet rule in season one, I thought it was a really interesting starting point. I thought they explained it well of why, you know, we saw in the Clone Wars that not everyone follows this rule. Why is it happening now? I was like, okay, I get all that. Yeah. And then it felt like over the course of the series, they were going to dig into like cults and religious trauma. And is there really only one way to be a Mandalorian? And I thought it was going to be this great character arc for Din to eventually reject those rules, take off the helmet. And that never happened. Like, I thought that was going to be the emotional final point of season three of like, I don't want my son to have to wear a helmet all the time. I mean, look at that cute face. And also,
don't you dare put him in a helmet.
It wasn't a sin.
It seemed like that's where season two was going. I mean, he dishonored himself. And then season three introduced this. Oh, no, or Mandalorian, the Book of Boba Fett introduced. Yeah, just go to the waters. And was that really hard to do? To quote another channel,
I just don't like the idea that it was a sin for him to emotionally connect with his son. And then I really felt that in this movie of like you're following these rules, and I know that there's all these behind the scenes reasonings for it, but it just frustrates me because I feel like Din is stagnating, and that's probably just not what his character arc was ever going to be, but I'm having trouble getting over it.
It's asking too much of the audience to have a puppet baby that doesn't talk and a man in a helmet. I think it's asking too much to have those two be the main stars, because I feel like they work great when there's a third character around. So like Rata was kind of the third character for this. And I found myself more connected with Rata's story than Din's, you know.
Did that surprise you? That Rata, actually his story drew you in, because we were kind of fandom was derisive, you know, from the trailers.
I loved Rata. And I always thought he was a funny character, and always wondered if he was ever going to come back. And the fact that Filoni put him in the movie, I was like, this is great. I'm in for this ride.
The second he started talking about like fatherhood and legacy and all that, and which obviously ties into what Din and Grogu were going through, I was like, I cannot believe they brought Rata the Hutt back for a thematically important reason. I was shocked by that.
Well, did you guys catch that he's Jabba's son?
They mentioned it twice, I think. He gave the same speech twice in the movie about not wanting to be like his dad. But every Jon Favreau movie, with very few exceptions, follows the exact same story. Like, they are all about fathers and sons, which is interesting because his mother passed away when he was a kid. He was raised by his single dad.
That's what Star Wars is about, really. Lucas himself says it's about the fathers, the sons, the grandfathers. I like that Din like realized he was in like a fundamentalist cult, and he was like, all right, and just like embraced it.
Options, and he went the more extreme way. He was like, no, I have to atone for looking my son in the face.
Leader is like backing off of the rule, and the cult leader is like, you know what, it's okay if Bo-Katan and all those other, if you don't want to wear the helmet all the time, it's fine. And Din's like, okay, but I'm gonna still do it.
Well, because contractually, I don't want to be here right now. So it's much easier if Lateef Crowder could just walk around or Brendan Wayne. We did one of my favorite videos that we've done here just at the channel period was we talked about the meaning, the hidden meaning of season three of The Mandalorian and about like all of the symbolism from the Jewish faith that could be in there. And we had a scholar on who did a little bit of writing. We also took from this great YouTube panel where they said it's interesting, though, that it's like that they didn't say, oh, this is the wrong way to go, because it's like saying for, you know, more strict religions like Orthodox Judaism that it's okay to, you know, have your rules and your garments and the way you, you know, dress to express your faith. And I kind of like that aspect of it. From a storytelling perspective, it sucks to have your main character not emote just on a fundamental level, and also to be this invincible wrecking ball all through the movie for most of it. He's never put on his back foot until, you know, the scene with Imbo, which was cool to see him in live action. That was awesome.
I might be the lone one out here, but I'm fine with him being under the helmet, because I think that the two guys that play him most of the time under the helmet are super like expressive and emotive, just with like the head tilts and just the way he carries himself. Like, I feel like I always know what Din is thinking just by like slight head movements and stuff. So I'm kind of fine with Pedro not being super involved and just coming up.
The monotone, though, it just doesn't like if you went into this movie raw, right? Like if you said, I've never seen an episode of The Mandalorian, I think you basically get the premise really quick, even without the crawl. Okay, here's this space cowboy, here's this little frog guy, he's cute, and they do stuff together. But the fact that you don't get any context for what this guy wants or what has been taken from him or what he's just basically doing gigs for the first part of the movie. And then when they take his helmet off and the Hutts explain to the audience why this is a big deal, then it's like, okay, now we're in the shit. So if his helmet would have been removed in the first act, so we know, okay, he's got to kill them and this has to happen or he can't rejoin his people, then maybe I'm thinking in too traditional of a structure, but for people who walk in off the street with their grandkids who don't know the show, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I mean, I guess laser blast, pew, pew, pew.
We talked about how I think it would have been better, even if it happened when it does in the movie, that the Hutts, they take it off, they say, this is priceless, and then he fights for a scene, and they're like, good job, and they give it back. And it would have been a way bigger swing if Pedro spent the second half of that movie playing the Mandalorian, and it would have felt more significant than just,
my eye roll. When he threw the helmet back down, I'm like, oh my God, I guess so Pedro had to go.
Yeah, well, it just feels
it's like weird they even let him keep the armor. So it's Beskar. Yeah. It's weird they let him keep the armor at all.
Yeah, it's all baseless. Know,
yeah, not just well, that, the helmet.
I think that there is an element of this movie, a lot of elements of this movie that make it kind of feel like two things that are not movies. One is like a theme park ride. This movie had a very much, this is going to be a future theme park ride at Galaxy's Edge, and it also had in my opinion a lot of like video game qualities, like the idea of getting the helmet returned to him because he completed a task is like very much out of a video game. It doesn't make any sense for you to get this loot back or this gear back, but you did the thing that the game program asked you to do, so you have it back, like Mario getting his cap back after it blows off in the wind or something like that. I felt like there was just several moments in this movie that felt like This is a theme park ride or this is a video game. And while that is fun in the immediacy of being in the theater, when you're trying to piece it all together in your head as like a linear movie, I think it ultimately leaves a viewer unsatisfied. Sorry, Colton.
Well, no. The movie started over like three times. Like there are like four 30-minute chunks of this movie. Almost as if it was originally designed to be a TV show.
Once you get Sigourney Weaver, it's got to be a movie.
It's the Defenders, I guess.
Yeah. I've only seen it once, but did I miss them doing any type of like who she is? Because that bothered me.
Wasted her, I feel like. Yeah. They didn't give us any backstory. Why is she there? Like, I just felt like she was super wasted. But I mean, she was a fun character.
And have her like talking to the Chancellor or something, or mention like, I don't know, maybe I'm like wanting too many member berries, but I just,
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens off camera. Like, oh yeah, well, we heard that the Hutts are going to double cross us anyway, so we showed up anyways. There's Johnny not a parallel plot line. You know,
Commander Coyne told us everything, and I'm like, but what?
What does that mean?
Yeah, but I'm that way too. I'm thinking like, okay, so you know, what is going to happen next, and what did Coyne tell them, and how does this work in the Thrawn's plan? That's another video. But sorry, Colton.
Do you guys think if this wasn't a Star Wars, it's a better movie?
Like if if it wasn't a Star Wars, it's a worse movie.
I agree. Okay. Because I think a lot of the fun, like I love the first half of this movie. I had even though it is, I agree, like all these like little chunks, I was just having so much fun going to new planets, and the Dejarik fight I think is so much fun because it's Star Wars. Yeah. And if I didn't have any of that connection, then me as just a movie going fan would be like, huh. I'd be very curious to see like someone who like, didn't know that, how they related to it.
Yeah.
The more like several episodes of the show happened after they go back to Nevarro, because then there's basically an act break, and that's where the missing like four or five episodes would be. Sorry, Molly, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you're good. I think the more lore you know, and like the closer you studied the television show, like knowing all of that meant nothing in this movie. Mm-hmm. None of it really connected. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sound like I deserve more as a harder core fan or whatever, but like it just felt empty and like, okay, inconsequential.
Inconsequential is the word I would have used. Yeah.
I completely agree with that. I don't think it, like you could quote Unforgiven, deserves got nothing to do with it, whether you're like the world's biggest fan or not a fan of all. The fact of the matter is three seasons of this show exist and they could pull from, whether it's, you know, cameos from characters, which they had a couple, but they didn't, none that were meaningful characters that like, they didn't have Amy Sedaris's Tatooine mechanic character come back.
Carson Teva is meaningful to me.
Okay, well,
he's there. Yeah, exactly. Good. He's been on our channel before too.
Then I apologize. But I guess I think like when I was watching it, I was like, there, other than just knowing that this show exists and seeing a couple Disney Plus commercials, you don't really need anything to go into this movie. Like you kind of can figure it, piece it together. And if anything, it's like knowing more about the lore of the Mandalorian TV show, it hamstrings you because you're like, well, wait, why won't Miggs Mayfield come in here in this situation?
That would have been
saving the day. And and obviously Cara Dune they can't have for, you know, outside reasons, but it's like there are plenty of, well,
why?
She's talking to them again. It's going to happen. She's definitely working with
them. She went to
her
home planet. But she's still fighting Ronda Rousey.
I think she's unconscious. Yeah.
But anyway, I just think it was, I think it was like to the detriment of that show. Like the fact that all that stuff existed, it was hard because I kept waiting for it to kind of like lean closer to the TV show, and it just kind of never did.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I think this movie would have worked way better if they had put it out, had the idea and put it out after season one.
Mm. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Like, earlier on, before we got bogged down with everything that happened in season two and three, I wonder what that would have felt like.
It probably would have made $1 billion. Too.
Just especially after season two, the momentum of people coming off of season two were like, that was incredible. If they had a movie next and it didn't take 3 years, and like after
and if the
season
reunion
two
would
and
have happened in a movie too.
Yeah.
Between the two.
All this stuff just lost momentum, and there were like these long year gaps in between seasons, and
the strike didn't help for sure.
Ryan, are you suggesting they put Luke Skywalker in a movie instead of keeping him in a Disney Plus show?
I mean, as much as for us and what we do, a Disney Plus Luke Skywalker show would be great. Yeah, he should be.
I hated how they used Zeb. As a fan of the Zeb character, I tried to think about that move. And I asked my wife, who hasn't seen Rebels or anything, like, I was like, what'd you think about Zeb? And the first thing she said was, which one is Zeb? I was like, you're proving my point. Yeah.
He
would just randomly pop up and I would be like, oh, Zeb's there with them on this. Okay.
His line where he goes like, I'm a pilot, not a mechneck. I was like, Zeb is so much more than a pilot.
Yeah. They just didn't do any work in the movie to make you care about his character. So like, we all probably were like, oh, cool, Zeb, because we've seen Rebels. But the majority of people have not seen Rebels. So yeah, I found that annoying.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of the opposite on the, did you guys all like the, I call it the second out of four acts, like when they're on Shikari and all that. I wasn't crazy about that bit of the movie. I
mean, the score was enough for me.
I was going to say, yeah.
I love the score.
I've listened to that score so many times.
Okay, but did it kind of started to insist upon itself a little bit. I was like, okay, I get it.
No.
I like the score, but my God, it felt like a music video.
The fact that they have the exact same scene where he goes to see Rod of the Hutt. Was really
the back and forth felt strange.
Yeah. Going to like Hugo and then Rada and then Hugo and then Janu and then Rada. Yeah.
Exactly. Like on this planet, there's two people that you can go visit for information. And they're both voiced by celebrities. I want to get to like the fun Star Wars aspect. We've had enough of this boring analytical shit. So let's talk about the fun Star Wars aspect. A little bit of housekeeping. We do have a few super chats that we're going to get to in just a little bit. But I want to remind everybody, we did just expand our memberships. And we've got our Star Wars parody merch sale is going on for 5 more days. I had to check the date really quick. So first off, let me just remind you that if you become a store member at our store owner tier, we have a private Q&A we're going to do. We should have, I think there's 2 of you guys right now, up on the community page. Last time I checked, nobody had answered, but we need to work out the time to do that. And if you're at our $5 tier, you get exclusive videos. We're doing watch parties. We did X-Men the other day. We did it for everybody, not just members. And we're figuring out what to do with those. We took a lot of suggestions off you guys. I think we're going to do X2 next, and it's going to be a lot more like Easter egg-y and things like that. And pointing out like little things you may have missed. And also, more importantly, a 15% merch discount at that tier, which applies also on top of sales like our Star Wars sales. So we have great Star Wars parody merch like Good Soldiers Follow Orders, one of my favorites. I have Friends Everywhere. I love this one. It's one of our new ones, the Retro Docking Bay 94, Scum and Villainy Welcome. One of my all-time personal favorites, if I can find it listed in here, is the Boba Fett. This one's great. It's got like Easter eggs in it where Boba Fett's hat has the Hutt symbol on it and lots of other tiny little details when you take a look. The Tosche Station Power Converter Sale, Darth Master Vulcan, which remains one of the nerdiest shirts we've ever made. Of course, no one's ever really gone. And this incredible Japanese-inspired Darth Maul Warrior shirt. Plus, we have classics like the Hello There shirt and placemat. And you can find links for all those down below. Thanks for listening to my plug. Now, before we get to the super chats, let's do some Star Wars nerding, right? What was your favorite, like, just, yes, that Star Wars kind of moment? What do we get from this? Molly?
We already talked about the Dedric fight, but that's a big one. I mean, just hearing that word and immediately thinking of the Holo Chess table and then seeing what that meant, like getting all of the most dangerous creatures that he could to fight each other. That was like the nerdiest moment for me. And like going to see it with a bunch of different people, the 4 different times that I saw it, every time I would like look over and the other really big Star Wars nerds in our group would just be like bouncing in their chair. They were so excited.
And the floor was the Jarek board too, which is cool.
Yeah, it was like painted like the chess table.
Yeah.
That's easily my favorite part of the movie. Wow. Between it's just like it just feels like dumping out your Star Wars action figures in a kiddie pool and like rolling around in them and just reveling in it. And it's stupid and it's like self-referential in a crazy way, but like it's just there's so much joy in it for me. And I love Rada's theme, like Ludwig's score at that point.
So good.
I think Rada's theme is I just keep listening to that one on repeat.
And it's a great running track too. If you like to run to like concussive,
it's very like Rocky.
Yeah.
There's some horns in it that sound very Rocky-esque. But the Mantellian Savrip gets to pick up the Canton Strider and like smash him, which is a move that we see in A New Hope on the chess table. Yeah. So like we see that multiple times throughout different movies that the Holo chess table shows up in, Seeing that happen on the big screen, I was just like, they did the thing.
So long that you knew the names of the creatures. I had to look them up.
You're
surprised? Like off the top of your head. No, I'm not surprised. I'm saying I love it. That's why I love having you guys on and watching your channel.
I feel like I'm having, maybe I still have my analytical hater hat on. I did not, that was my least favorite part of them. I feel like that part of the movie felt so like small in what the scale should have been compared to like in Thor Ragnarok, you have a very similar scene with the what's his name? Jeff Goldblum's character up there,
Grandmaster, up high in the rafters,
yeah. watching, and the huge arena. I don't know. This one just felt like really small for Star Wars. But you think
the CGI took you out of it a little bit? Because I'm kind of a notorious hater for like overly CG, like a bunch of overly CG done characters in the same area.
Yeah. You know what I really liked that they did with the swamp character and the rocking chair and the two robots at the end was you could tell that they did, I don't know if it was actual stop motion, I know the robots were, but they like lowered the frame rate of the lizard guy. Like they actually lowered his frame rate to make him look kind of stop motion-y, like original Star Wars. And I could be wrong, but I don't think they did that for the fight sequence with the big CG characters,
which it would have been appropriate for that.
It would have, because it would have matched the game. Motion, yeah, I would.
And
Zellans
were stop motion too, right? When they were moving down the ramp,
I think they're just straight. Well, they're puppets. Yeah,
I know, but they did they not when they walked down the ramp? They weren't stop motion.
Oh yeah, well they'll do. Yeah, they stop motion. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, but no, I mean, oh my god, and we have like, I'm sorry. Anytime we talk about the Rise of Skywalker, I'm always like, yeah, but hey, I mean, any movie with Babu Frick, man.
My favorite part of the movie is one that I've heard a lot of people say was a snooze fest, but it was Jojo. That's my Grogu. Why did I say my dog's name? It was Grogu's time in the woods while Din was unconscious. I loved watching him meditate and get him water. I thought that whole scene was just like color graded really well and shot really well. That's my favorite, like 15 minutes of the movie. I love that part.
And the music is really nice too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that they were able to pull that off with not a human, and it's just like, Jim Henson always struggled. I think, you know, Molly, you said earlier about CG characters with no humans in it. I personally feel like puppets are always most interesting, even Muppets, when they interact with a human. It's just, I think, a good rule of thumb. So same thing with, you know, really creatures like the Dark Crystal, where, you know, that's not as effective as a movie as Labyrinth, you know. But man, that sequence with Grogu, no other creatures needed. It was great. Yeah. Really.
I love when he puts Din in the hut and his feet are sticking out because that's I had just been thinking, like, because we see that montage of him like hastily putting like all this grass and stuff on top of him. I wanted them to cut to a wide shot and his legs are still just sticking out in the open to be seen. Yeah. And so then when they ended up doing it, kind of, I thought that was cute.
Tell me what you think. What's your Star Wars thing you liked about this?
Well, I have two, so I'll say them both quickly. I thought that the twins lair with all of the different side rooms with slithering, slug-like huts. That was like an expansion of like information about huts that I thought was very satisfying. Like, oh yeah, they just all kind of burrow and nest and be gross in this giant castle together.
It's like walking into a whorehouse, you know, like that. It has that same kind of like seedy feel to it.
Yeah. It was kind of adult, which I've heard.
I don't know. I mean, I just watch movies. I don't know.
Just like that, really. Ryan. Trust me.
Got it.
And then my other thing, I think where the Venn diagram of Mandalorian and Grogu and Star Wars, like as a whole entity, kind of overlap is the scene where Mando is trying to instruct Grogu on how to use the ship, and he just keeps firing missiles at them. That has like the kind of Star Wars-y, something needs to go perfectly here, and it goes as bad as possible humor mixed in with like Grogu's mischievousness and just kind of like, I thought that lined up perfectly, and that to me felt like very, I'm like, okay, I'm back into Star Wars.
In a way, he's following orders because Din keeps telling him never touch the buttons.
Right. Yeah.
So he's like,
I'm
just going
to
keep
the one I told you not to push. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I wish they'd had the guts to make the missile just hit the stormtroopers.
That's what I thought that was going to
just incinerate them.
Yeah. Grogu kills 8 people.
Especially like chapter 3 of The Mandalorian, where Din goes into the Imperial, you know, hideout and like just murders dudes with the flamethrower and the knife, and it's all in shadow, but pretty brutal. So you compare that to this movie, and it really was like a kid-friendly romp where they didn't want to destroy too much on camera, I thought, which is fine. Like I said, the movie's scoring great with kids. Like kids,
I really think they're trying to lean it towards like introducing a new audience, a new age group into Star Wars,
which is important for a franchise like this.
And I kind of feel like The Mandalorian always pulled a bait and switch on us. If you look at the trailers, we were like, oh, this is dark shit. This is like Clint Eastwood. And then, you know, the baby comes in and, you know, even the Anzellan's going, no, baby, no, baby, no. And he squeezes it. If you see season three and you know that he gave them bear hugs that hurt them, then it's great. And if you haven't, it's still amazing. Like, that's my favorite. That's what I was pleased about with this movie. I think you could have gone in fairly cold and enjoyed it, even if you didn't get like in-depth character development.
It was funny. I mean, like Mando realizing that their ship is way too small for him to get on and being like,
occurred to them.
Right.
Because that's the right size.
Right. And the score is just swelling up to this like triumphant where all is about to be well. And then it's like, this ship is the size of like a garage freezer. Like, you know, one of those whatever cold storage things. It's just too small.
Garage freezer.
That was really funny.
That's a Rochester reference.
Yes, they could have strapped him to the roof and at least gotten far enough away.
True. Yeah. True.
True. Yeah.
I don't know that thing has the horsepower.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I like how right afterwards too, we got this scene that should have been like Rambo. You know, like I'll fight him off. But the music was so sad and so depressing. And it was, you know, like Ludwig Göransson, man, can really hit any note you need him to. We've got a few super chats to get to here, guys. Let's see here. Armad, I can't read the rest of it, it's cut off, gave us £5 and said, I like a smaller movie. Seems like almost a reset after the sequel trilogy. Why not start back again, but slowly? I also like the aura farming hat guy. I don't know what, I'll admit it publicly, I don't know what the hell aura farming means. The kids say it.
So when Imbo like throws his hat at Mando and then like kicks it up and then does that across the brim, that's just like, it's a flourishy, he's just showing off for the hell of it.
You just know Filoni is backstage giggling like a schoolgirl when that happens. He's just like,
because he does it in the cartoon.
Yeah, he's got the hat in the Clone Wars, and he's always like surfing on it or using it as a shield, like he does in the movie. So,
well, and Filoni likes a hat.
Yeah, he loves a hat.
And yeah, again, Trapper. I always want to say Trapper Dave. What's his name? Trapper Wolf. Trapper Wolf.
Trapper Wolf. I like calling him Trapper.
Trapper
Dave.
Wolf. Trapper Dave is my famous hunter character that I'm well known for. That I do on internet videos.
I will say the Trapper Wolf cameo. I was like, sure, I get it. Like, that's never going to go away. But they gave him like two very prominent cameos, like in separate scenes, and I was like, okay, we get it.
And again,
the director's Carson Teva is right there. Rick Miyama,
when they were doing the press junket, Filoni and Favreau, Filoni says to Favreau, you didn't have to cut to me so many times. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
no, I think that's probably true. He strikes me as very uncomfortable on camera.
I did read that Favreau does talk about how much he relishes in like putting Filoni on screen because it makes him so deeply uncomfortable. So it does make like, that could have been, but that's a pretty high stakes joke to play on your friend.
Appreciate any director that does put themselves in the movie, because who wouldn't put themselves in a Star Wars movie? Like any of the directors who think they're too cool to give themselves a cameo, I'm like, you're missing out, man.
But I also wonder, could they have paid real actors that aren't directors that have already done Star Wars? Could they have just paid actors to play those parts?
It's,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't mind, like in The Mandalorian season one, when Trapper and Sash Ketter and Jib Dodger, I remember them all. All three of the directors came in and had a little cameo. I was like, that's fun. But now it keeps happening. Mm-hmm. And it does feel a little self-indulgent. And that's kind of something Favreau's always done. He loves to cast his friends. Mm-hmm. Like Toro Calican in episode 5 of season 1, which is like one of the least loved episodes. It's like he cast Bobby Cannavale's son. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Put him off pretty quick, though.
I feel like there's just a lot of like him casting his friends and a lot of stunt casting that I feel often takes me out of The Mandalorian.
Mm.
Lucas waited till the last one to throw
and
himself
he had to be forced
in.
To do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's done a character in the Clone Wars, but yeah. Anyway, sorry. Phil Aramba from Down Under gave us $8, said it was good, but it wasn't great. It was fun, but there wasn't any character development and it felt like 4 episodes condensed down. Everybody's the same at there's one bit of character development. He trusts Grogu more. When he gives him the choice, do we stay or fight? And he lets him pick. I think it acknowledges that Grogu's growing up a little bit. Did you guys get any other character development from the movie?
Well, my issue with that is I feel like it's just kind of repetitive of season three, because I feel like at the end of season three, Grogu has to save Din, and he does it very quickly. Grogu shows how capable he is in a fight now. He saves Din again and Bo-Katan. He seems like he has earned that trust. Mm-hmm. So this just seemed like a longer version of that same character development. I think that the best character development came from Rada the Hutt.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because he starts off like, I'm trying to distance myself from my father, and yet I'm still just using violence to gain notoriety. And then by the end, he's like, I think I'm going to stay here and work for the New Republic. Like, that is a character arc.
And yet, for me, what I wanted him to do was be a Hutt. And after all of that, once he realized that his cousins were dead, and there was nothing stopping him from being in charge, being like, well, since I'm already here.
I don't know. Let me throw this out there. Let's say that there's a future Star Wars, the Thrawn movie, whatever, right? And everybody's the battle, and Thrawn's got his guys, and their X-Wings are flying in, and we cut to Trapper Wolf, and we cut to Jib Dodger, and then we cut to Rada the Hutt in the cockpit of an X-Wing. That's all I want. I don't need to know the logistics of it. I just want to see it.
We will build a Chewbacca. Big enough for him. Fresh
biscuit. They need a specialty X-Wing just for him. Maybe he could pilot like a U-Wing. Those are big, right? He could do that. Raider Reaper gave us $5 and said, coolest crossover ever. Screen Crush Star Wars Explained. I give Mando and Grogu an 8.5 rating. Had great action, good CGI, solid plot, and Easter eggs galore. It really did have a lot of Easter eggs. Like, we did a full video, and then I was like, oh, let me see what everybody else found. And I was like, oh, shit. Added like two pages just referencing other sites of stuff like that didn't get the droid Gotra and all this other stuff. So, yeah, an amazing film for that. And Radio Free Browns gave us $2, said, saw I Love Boosters instead. Highly recommend. I recently saw The Sheep Detectives, cried like an infant. Amazing movie. Can't recommend it higher for you guys. Very good.
So good.
Mom Fears My... Sorry. I love this username. Mom Fears My Music for $5. No, Mom, I'm not going to stop playing my drums. You fear my music. Rada being a kind-hearted orphan instead of an evil, violent pit fighter was a great example of how to successfully subvert expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the idea of him learning that, like, he can fit in. Like, this idea keeps coming up in the movie about, like, not fitting in or whatever. But by the end of it, he's like, I feel safe here. I can fit in.
And Zeb's like, yeah, there's a place for you.
Yeah, and the idea that he leans so much into his fame and drawing his sense of self from the praise of others, and then he saw how fleeting fame is whenever people turn on him. I don't know. Do you think Jon Favreau might have been projecting something about like maybe online reaction to certain seasons of The Mandalorian? It's kind of interesting. but yeah, Mom Fears My Music. I agree. That was a great subversion of expectations. And then Wolf Tab gave us, and this is unbelievable, I just want to say thank you. This is way more than you needed to do, but we really appreciate it. Give us $50. $50 from Wolf Tab. Said, I love me some Sigourney Weaver, but is the New Republic hard up for pilots? Because having her lead a fighter of D-Wings into battle instead of leading from the command center felt a bit much. Keep up the great work. Best to Doug. I don't know. I don't think it's that kind of battle. And I like a leader that charges forward. You know what I mean?
We got to see Sigourney Weaver fly an X-Wing. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the $50, but come on. That's a horrible complaint. But
thank you for the $50, but we don't like you. No, I mean, I get it. But I also felt like having her be in a command center would have been a little superfluous. She didn't need to be, you know. Instead, we got to see her like getting mixed up in the action.
And we have to remember, the New Republic has not, at this point, and I could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, they have not embraced the Rebellion as the New Republic military. They are still a very scrappy organization, the Rebellion, I think.
Yeah, they heavily demilitarize after the Battle of Endor and Jakku, and like the Galactic Civil War is over. So the military is like much smaller than the Empire, certainly, and smaller than like what the Republic had. But someone did ask us, it's like, what's going on at Adelphi that all the pilots are over 50 and they're all like from the rebellion. It doesn't seem like they're recruiting new. And I'm like, yeah, maybe a Delphi
well, is
a
don't. Beach
planet.
And doesn't
there you retire. Go.
Yeah. Doesn't Leia have to like help get them like funding and stuff? Like and as it turns into the resistance and everything. Yeah. Like
that's years later. Yeah. That's like 28 AFY, I think, or ABY. Does that sound about right, guys? Yeah. Like when Bloodline takes place.
I just like that it still felt scrappy.
Yeah, because well, like Alex said, they demilitarized.
Yeah.
The Adelphi base just feels like a really tiny little like offshoot base that isn't as connected to everything else.
I liked related to that when they went in, they had like a flag hanging up from the rebellion, which reminds me of like the American Legion Hall, how they'll have like the different flags from different services or the POW flag. I thought that was great because that's not the symbol of the New Republic. It looks like it, but it's not that. And that's just their way of being like, yeah, I served, you know, like we all served in that. Unless I'm wrong, and that's the symbol of the New Republic military.
So you like the rebel flag. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's the lesson to take away from what I just said. All right. And another big one here, Border Crossing Law gave us $20 and said, biggest sins of the movie, there should not have been opening credits. They should have cast excellent actors to play the warlords. And they definitely should not have had directors and producers as the X-Wing pilots. As far as the opening credits, yeah, that felt a little weird for Star Wars, right? Like having him walk into base and the different names and top billing and all that. I didn't even notice the crawl.
The first time I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even note. I didn't think twice about it until a bunch of our friends were like, I can't believe they had credits in the opening. And I was like, what? Okay.
So I... Go ahead.
I guess Rogue One and Solo did not.
No Star Wars movie has ever had opening credits. And I personally hated it. I hate that
Lucas had to pay a fine to the Director's Guild for that too. Sorry, go ahead.
I hate that they have this rule at Lucasfilm that they don't do opening crawls on non like saga films. Like they didn't do it for Rogue One, didn't do it for Solo. So instead they do this weird just text card screen of yellow text that's so like just kind of boring. Like what, you have the opening crawl right there, do it. And then if you're gonna do opening credits, especially for this movie, why is it just a bunch of B-roll of X-Wings driving around on a tarmac? How about Sigourney Weaver narrating like she does in the trailer? We all know the story about the Mandalorian bounty hunter and a child. How about have her like give some narration, like explaining and kind of refreshing, or for people who are new, who these two characters are, and have like some cool like kind of like Raimi Spider-Man artwork of like from the seasons of the Mandalorian. I hated how they handled the opening.
It was an Ahsoka season one episode one crawl. It was the exact same like font and vibe. I don't know, Alex Molly, where do you guys stand on opening crawls in your Star Wars?
I don't have to have it. they're great, but I do think there is something good about saving them for like the big trilogies or like the big main story movies. But that could have also made people feel like this movie like was so much smaller.
I think there were a lot of like ulterior motives to making it. And some of it, having seen it a few times, I'm like, you know what? This did a lot of firsts. First with opening credits, it never said, I have a bad feeling about this. No lightsabers. There was something else that I had thought of that's kind of like a staple of Star Wars. And I feel like this was a bit of like, let's break some of the traditions so that there's a precedent in the future. Yeah, I don't know. I also think that the whole movie was kind of rushed out a little bit, specifically so that when we get to Starfighter, we're not going to be going, it's got a lot of pressure because it's the first movie in 8 years. It's just the first movie in 1 year. So
I think Starfighter is the true make or break for sure.
And I think they were trying to lessen. That's a complete conspiracy theory, but I just think they were trying to lessen the pressure on it.
I think it's an interesting parallel to what's going on in the MCU, where it's like Thunderbolts and Brave New World came out, and it was like, I don't think, because we knew that there was Doomsday coming, it didn't feel like those movies had to be billion-dollar movies. Or the, I mean, it certainly put more pressure on Doomsday. But I think that, like, I think it feels similar in this regard, that, like, since we know that Starfighter's coming out, it's not like, I think this movie's doing fine and will continue to do fine, but it's like that one is probably going to need to be a big, big movie.
What's going to be interesting is its second weekend drop off, because I have a feeling that maybe it won't be too bad.
It might hold.
Drop off. Yeah,
I agree.
And that'll be huge if word of mouth.
Oh, yeah, especially since Star Wars doesn't do that well overseas, too. Like, yeah, the China market doesn't.
The holiday weekend, like, maybe people were out of town for a holiday weekend, and then they might see it the next.
And these types of movies, they usually have huge drop-offs. I mean, part of that is because everybody rushes out to see them opening weekend. But
yeah,
this, do we know, what was the weekend box office? I know the four-day, I think, was 100, and the three-day was 80. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think about 100, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's got some room to
domestic.
Yeah.
I think so too. I think it'll end up around 500.
And is there a big release? I'm checking right now if there's a big movie coming out. I don't think there is a big movie coming out.
It's a little dry for a while. I think Masters of the Universe comes out not this week, but next week. And then
next week,
Story and Supergirl.
Yeah, next week is Backrooms, but that's not even remotely competing for the same audience.
You know that there's a big Backrooms Grogu crossover?
I got permission to take my nephew to see it.
Nice.
From That Is All, gave us $5 and said, at times, Jeremy Allen White sounded like Chris Farley. I noticed when he said, you can't blame a guy for trying, when Rada tried to escape from Mando. I actually like what they added to his voice. I liked the little bit of a depth and tenor they gave to him. What did you guys think of the performance there?
I liked when he did Fat Guy in a Little Coat.
Yeah, that was a bit much. That was very Chris Farley like. Yeah,
I liked his truck speeder down by the river. Yeah,
yeah.
When he fell from the table during the fight, excellent. Yeah.
Molly, you liked his voice a lot, right?
I did. Yeah, I mean, I like the sound design that they did with his voice, but I also like that he sounded young still for a Hutt. Mm-hmm. You know, compared to the other Hutts and how they sounded.
One person who saw it ahead of me told me he sounds just like Jeremy Allen White. And I was like, oh, that sounds awful. So maybe I was expecting that. So when I came in, I was like, no, they gave him like a little bit of a bass and some tenor in there. And oddly, still looks like Jeremy Allen White. I think they used his eyes or something, even though his eyes aren't blue. But I kind of looked at him and went, I don't know, man. I think if someone showed me a picture of 10 Hutts and I had to pick the Jeremy Allen White one, I just would have picked you. Like, it's weird how they were able to do that with him. Mm. And we've got a question here from Comic Jungulo, who's been a member for 4 months at our Screen Crush staff tier. Thank you very much. I can't believe it's been 4 months since we started that. Says, okay, do I watch in theaters or wait for Disney Plus to release? Not much, some context. Not much of a Star Wars fan yet. God, are you on the right stream to learn about it? I've only watched season one of The Mandalorian and Grogu and love y'all. Not that I'm going to nitpick, but it's just called The Mandalorian, not The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Theaters.
Given this person's level of experience, do they wait on Disney Plus or watch it in theaters?
The answer is always theaters. That's where you see a movie. Yeah.
If any Star Wars is available to be seen on the big screen, do it.
Yep.
It's just from a purely aesthetic reason. It's just more enjoyable. You know, you're in the seat and the sound and I always say theater. Tommy, you didn't like the movie. What do you think?
I hated it. No, I see it in the theater. Are you kidding me?
I know you like that.
Okay. I thought the movie was just fine. And what made it better was that delicious popcorn and Reese's Pieces and root beer. So I couldn't get that at home. I don't even know how to turn my oven on. And I don't make candy. So you got to go to the theater just for the snacks.
Had a milkshake.
It's funny. Good. I might be the only one. I'm hearing his level of experience that he's only seen the first season. And I guess if like that didn't draw you in to watch more, I was like, maybe you do wait for streaming. Huh? But I mean, I obviously like the big screen is I just love going to the movies. So
me too.
I agree that's the best way to see it. But like, if you're not all in on Star Wars and especially not The Mandalorian, then I'm like,
it's true. Well, like, I mean, people have to budget for going to the movies now, especially if you're bringing a whole family. Like, it gets really expensive, and I completely understand anyone wanting to wait and save the money and just watch it on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Disney Plus, though, here's my last question for you guys. Then sadly, we got to sign off. when the story continues, should it be another movie or Mandalorian season 4?
I would prefer another season, because I think that of all of the streaming shows that they have, a lot of them feel like long movies that are just split up kind of arbitrarily. But The Mandalorian is, it's got an episodic format of we go to a new planet, we do a favor for someone else, and they help us on our season-long journey. And I was like, it's crazy to me that they took Obi-Wan Kenobi, which was a movie, and split it into a show. But now they're taking what I think is like they're the best in terms of episodic. It's an episodic series and they're putting it on the big screen.
Yeah, the best formatted.
I think it's formatted very well for a series. So I would like to see a fourth season.
Whereas Skeleton Crew, Acolyte, etc., probably, I think you're right, do feel like they were movies that were stretched.
Ryan will tell you, I wake up screaming in the middle of the night about Kenobi being made into a show. Yeah.
Hey, Darth Maul does the same thing. Wakes up in the middle of the night and screams Kenobi. But no, it's always a topic we revisit. And I think Deborah Chow did a good job on the show too, as good as you can, but that story should have been on the big screen for sure. Tony, what do you think?
I'm going to go way zag here. I think it should be an episodic season of TV, and I think there should be a time jump.
Ooh.
50 like years? A big time jump?
I'm sick of this little baby. I want him to be a brooding teenager. No.
Do you want to hear him talk? That's a question I have.
I don't know that I need him to anymore, because I've heard Yoda talk. And if he talks, I want him, if he doesn't talk like Yoda, if he's Rada the Hutt to Jabba, the way Grogu is going to be to Yoda, I think I can live without it.
I don't know. Yaddle doesn't talk like that. I think Yoda has a speech impediment.
I don't think Disney's going to allow them to age him up. I don't, not for a while.
Well, unless it's set 100 years in the future and he's, you know.
But, you know, that's the worst thing they could do. They have the opportunity to not do that with this Star Wars character, where we know what's going to happen to him. I hope they keep him. I don't want to see him in the future and then more in the past. No.
Show us your question. Teenage years.
Yeah. I want season 4 of The Mandalorian. But I think Grogu's future is on the big screen. I think when they do 10, 11, and 12, Grogu needs to be in 10, 11, and 12 with Rey. I want that. But yeah, I'm all for a season 4.
I hope not. Just for the reason you said, I like not knowing. But yeah, I think the show should run for 10 seasons. I don't understand why they would take this thing where you don't even need the actor there. And you could literally do anything and draw from this galaxy. And you condense all that production into a film. Just make it your staple of Disney Plus. And then things that you can make Star Wars movies out of, the things like Skeleton Crew that probably should have been movies to begin with. I know, I like Skeleton Crew. I think it's underrated. We got to sign off there. Alex, Molly, you can find them on Star Wars Explained. And you got any specific things coming up you want to plug and tell us about?
We're working on a tabletop show that I'm really, really excited about, that I'm hoping will be done and ready to go in June or July. So that's going to be on a totally separate channel, but it's just something that's been a lot of fun to work on. So I'm excited for that.
And okay, and yeah, you'll find links to their channel down below, and also follow them on socials for all the news. Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for having us.
Bye, guys. And Tommy. Oh, shit. Tommy, look at the time. You got to go, buddy. You got to poison more people with peanuts.
Oh, my God. I've never seen a hand that big. That is the most swollen I've ever seen a hand. Ryan, I got to get out of here. Thanks so much for having me.
Understood. Bye, Tommy. And Colton, you can always find Colton's stuff on the channel. Did you do a Mando review on your own channel?
I did. Yes.
Okay, so you can find that on his channel, and always get his thoughts here on Screen Crush. And thanks very much. And we want to hear from you guys. Let us keep letting us know in the comments what you thought of Grogu and the Mandalorian, as it should have been called. And you can find us on our free-to-join Discord server. Find me on Substack or on all of the socials. And if it's your first time here, please subscribe, smash that bell for alerts. Screen Crush,